Good morning. My name is Andrew. In case you don't know me, I usually attend the early morning service at 8:15, but I'm glad to sort of see all of you, brothers, sisters, friends, guests, and I'm happy to share God's message with all of you. And so let's take a look. Here we go. Does anyone know what that is? You have to find it in a museum for sure. It looks old. It is an antique. And I call it the version one of iPod. It's called a phonograph. And it was invented by Thomas Edison, a very famous inventor. The story began more than 100 years ago. In December 1914, Edison's manufacturing facilities, along with all his records, were destroyed when his facility was burned up by a fire. And, the loss was estimated at $2 million. Remember, it's more than 100 years ago, so $2 million were a lot of money. And his son, during the fire, was looking for him, and he wondered if such a huge fire would break his dad's spirit. Then he spotted his father watching calmly the fire that burned up his wealth and his record. And Charles, that's his son, recalled, "My heart ached for him. He was 67, no longer a young man, and everything he had and knew was going up in flames." The next morning, walking about the charred remains of his hopes and dreams, Edison, the 67-year-old inventor, said, "There's value in disaster. All our mistakes are burned up. Thank God we can start anew." What a comeback. 3 weeks later, Edison managed to invent the phonograph and start the iPod era. Everyone wants to be a success, yet everyone experiences failures at some point in his or her life. Most of the great leaders in the Bible failed at some point. Abraham lied about his wife. King David had an affair and plot to murder his new mistress' husband. Apostle Peter publicly disavowed Christ, not once, not twice, three times. Have you ever failed at something that really meant a lot to you? How do you feel when your hopes and dreams were crushed? Some of us may be even dealing with failures right now. And I can assure you, we are not alone. Today, we will look into Moses' faith journey as he was molded and restored by God after his own spectacular failure. And in the passage we have just read, Moses meets God in the burning bush. And if you have watched the movie Prince of Egypt or attended Sunday school, you probably know that Moses was an Egyptian prince living in the royal palace. And you may wonder why, in the passage, all of a sudden, Moses is a shepherd tending a flock in a place called Midian, which is basically a place in nowhere. And also, shepherd in ancient Egypt carried a lot of negative meaning, like rude, like being rude, or being a barbarian. Therefore, shepherd were not sort of the professional. They were the low lives. Can you imagine what a fall from grace for Moses? He indeed was a prince in chapter 1 and 2, but he's now a low-life shepherd. He once was famous, now he is forgotten. His life once was full of promises, now he seems destined to live in obscurity. He buried his life of the past that is now resurfaced in this encounter with God. So to understand the journey, we need to retrace back 40 years ago as to what happened. So 40 years ago, the guy with the sort of red circle, that's sort of supposed to be Moses. And Moses was born a Hebrew, but became a prince in Egypt. 40 years ago, instead of enjoying his cushy life in the palace, he went out and took a look at his own people. It's recorded in Exodus chapter 2. And to identify with his own people, Moses wanted to see with his own eyes their lives and their plights as slaves. And if you read Hebrews in chapter 11, you may even get a sense that Moses was willing to give up his princely status and suffer along with his people. Then he saw a fellow Hebrew being beaten up by that evil Egyptian. And Moses defended his oppressed clansman and killed the Egyptian. And in a vivid detail in the Bible, he says, looking this way and that, and seeing no one was around, he killed the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. Moses knew what he would do was wrong. So he looked around, make sure nobody was watching, before killing the Egyptian. Furthermore, he buried the body to cover up his crime. In legal term, Moses committed premeditated murder. This picture probably would be his arrest warrant for murdering. It was probably posted somewhere, everywhere in Egypt, and they didn't have YouTube, so too bad. He might even be on the Egyptian police, the most wanted list. And because of it, he had to flee to Midian, where no one could find him. And if he ever returns to Egypt, what happened? Well, he could be arrested and sentenced to death for the murder. So that's a bit of the background. And after the murder, you would wonder, you know, you may wonder what Moses got in return for his trouble, standing up for his people. And proclamation of Moses as a national hero? Nope. A round of applause? Nope. A thank you card? Nope. On the contrary, event went downhill fast as he got into more troubles. Despite Moses' rescue, the Hebrew people did not even trust or accept him. In Acts chapter 7, and he says, Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them. But they did not. Worse yet, when he tried to break up a fight between two Hebrew people on the following day, one of the men said, who make you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me too, as you killed the Egyptian? The man rejected Moses' good intention, rejected Moses' intervention, and rejected Moses' leadership. Knowing that his murder was no longer a secret, his leadership bid unraveled, the dream of saving his own people crushed, Moses had no choice but to flee away from his from this place where he grew up, his family, his prestigious status, and the place and the palace, to do what? To become a shepherd. A lowly shepherd that looked after sheep in a remote, desolate place called Midian. That's Moses. And you could say that Moses' visit to his people backfired big time. Moses wanted to defend the oppressed, but committed murder instead. His mission started out with a bang, but ended with a whimper. He tried to deliver his people, but his people rejected him. And he was, and you could see, you know, how he felt. Well, not very good. I would say disappointment would be a huge understatement. He was disheartened as he gave up all for his people who rejected him. And he was also disillusioned. He thought he was doing God's work, but no, God was nowhere to be found. And lastly, he was devastated by the rebuff. Who make you ruler and judge over us? On the surface, you know, it questions the source of Moses' source of authority. But think about for a minute, at work, do you ever ask your supervisor or manager, who make you ruler and judge over us? Or at school, do we ever ask our teacher or professor, who make you judge and rule over us? We don't, because we know that they already have the authority, so we don't question it. So the fact that that was brought up sort of brings a really negative undertone. It's sort of like this. Moses, you know, you are not qualified as a leader. You suck, right? And who give you the authority to lead over us? So behind the rebuff is a vicious slight or attack against Moses and his identity, and it hurts. And it was nothing short of a betrayal. So you could see Moses 40 years ago. He was a disappointed man. He was a disheartened man. He was a disillusioned man. And he was a devastated man. Brothers and sisters, have you ever experienced mistakes or failures that leave deep scars in your life? Have these scars haunted you ever since? Have you been changed by the scar? You become scared about repeating the same mistake. You tend to tiptoe around it or avoid it altogether. These scars and failure make us think about what went wrong, what we did wrong, all the what-if questions that hang in our head. And Moses shows his scars next. So, back to the future. Back to 40 years later. Oops. Missing. Oh, okay, that part is fine. So 40 years later, back to chapter 3, Moses is now an 80-year-old shepherd, and God calls him to lead the real rescue attempt. Verse 10 says, God says, calls Moses, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. God's calling must be shocking to Moses. You say, me? Really? Like, after all, what could an 80-year-old senior do? His immediate response is even more telling. It's the first question. So the next one should be 40 years later. Oh, the first question. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Does the questions about his own identity, who am I, ring a bell? Like that 40 years ago, that dude that challenged Moses, who make you ruler and judge over us? Who are you, Moses? And then you see the second question that's directed at God. Who are you, God? I don't really know you that much. I don't even know your name. But take a look at those two questions. Who am I? Who are you, God? This fact belies a dark secret. This, the one single taunt, has haunted Moses for the 40 long years. That questions, who make you ruler and judge over us, is in his head all the time. He could not shake it, and he could not answer it. That's why when God shows up and calls him, these are the first two questions Moses raised. Sort of like, okay, if you want me to be there, you better answer these two questions first. Because I could not answer them. And I was challenged 40 years ago, and I had no answer. He failed spectacularly when he was overconfident and assumed authority 40 years ago. As a result, you could see that Moses has lost his confidence and even himself in his failure. And can you guess what goes through Moses' mind when God calls him and to save his own people? I don't think one sentence or even one paragraph can sum up his complicated feelings. But I guess he probably has the following thoughts. Number one, where were you, God, 40 years ago when I was carrying out the rescue mission? I gave up everything for the same people you now try to save. Why didn't you help me back then? Why did you leave me alone? It was a golden opportunity, you see, to save my people. I was still a prince. I was only 40 years ago. I was at the prime of my life. Now you must be joking. You show up, you expect an 80-year-old man to lead a rescue mission? Oh, by the way, I failed last time. What makes you think I will succeed this time? And Moses may be even bitter against God, squandering the mission, failing him personally, and wasting his life as shepherd in Midian. And he might even feel betrayed, not just by his people, but by God. Second, Moses could be thinking to himself, okay, how can I trust you, God? For the record, I don't even know your name. I don't know if you have power, you know, to help me. And back to the questions. He fears he would fail again. You know, fear the same rejection by the same people for the second time. And going back means Moses has to face up to his failure again. God's answer, well, may be sufficient, maybe not. But Moses is hesitant. You could say that he may be even afraid. And when we fail as miserable as Moses, we also will start second-guessing ourselves. We questioned, we doubt our ability, we doubt our mission, we doubt whether or not we have the right stuff, we doubt whether or not we are the right person, and we even doubt God. We may not say it, but we do. And we questioned ourselves, who am I? What can I do? Like, and then, who are you, God? You know, we feel so small, inadequate, insecure, and we lack the confidence to take on anything. And we convince ourselves that all our efforts will fail. And we fear failure. Why? Because failing means that we are a failure ourselves. We easily lose appetite for any new adventures or taking risks. Moses feels that accepting God's call to mount a comeback is totally mission impossible. You know, after all, he's not Tom Cruise. And secondly, you know, Egypt is the last place he wants to go. Remember, he's still a fugitive, and there's an arrest warrant with his hat on waiting for him in the border, right? And then he has to face his family and all the difficult questions, why he left. And then if he happens to bump into that guy that rejected him and haunted him for 40 years, what would he say to him? That he has to face down his own failure. That's difficult. I used to work at IBM, and I heard the story sort of passing on to me. And so I know some of you have worked in IBM too, so maybe you have heard the story. So long time, I've seen sort of, in the company, there was, you know, there was young executive. You know, he was bright, he was brilliant, aggressive, and then he took on a new venture. And then he dived himself into it, and everything looked good until it crashed. And the company lost, oh, about $10 million, give or take a few changes. And he was so disappointed and despondent. And he said, okay, that's it. I probably need to brush up my resume. And he went to see the CEO of IBM. And after some discussion, the executive fessed up and just said, well, you know, I goofed. And do you want my letter of resignation? And guess what the CEO said? You kidding me? The company has just paid you $10 million educating you. Failure may not be final. It probably is a lesson for us to learn. And when Moses asked those two questions, and let's look at God's response. I need to move ahead, move along. Tina, help. The next slide. God's sort of when Moses asked about his identity, who am I? And God's answer is, I will be with you. Does it sound like sort of really an answer? If you're puzzled, let me unpack it this way. It really doesn't matter who you are, Moses. What matters is that I've sent you, and I'll be with you as you go and stand before Pharaoh. Your success in this mission does not depend upon your greatness or power, but on mine. Therefore, when I say I'll be with you, you can be sure that I will be there from now till eternity. You see, the key to the mission is not who Moses is, but who he is with. That is God. Moses thinks that the whole mission is all about him. That's why he failed. God is the key to the mission. And as to Moses' questions about God's identity, who are you? God's answer is, I am who I am. I need another slide. Now we're working to, good. So the second answer is, I am who I am. Literally, God identified himself as I am. Most Bible scholars agree that the name reveals that God is incomparable in this universe. There's no one else beside him. Number two, the name reveals that God is self-existent. That means God is not created by anything. God creates things. The name reveals that God is eternal and unchangeable. And it's always the same, yesterday, today, and forever. Note the contrast between Moses' who I am and God's response, I am who I am. If Moses' questions reveal his outer lack of confidence, God's reply is to inspire confidence in him. And actually, God's answer is always the same. I'll be with you. And in other passages, in Deuteronomy 31:8, the Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. I will be with you. That's the theme. And, okay, so what do you think Moses will respond? Oops, sorry. Okay, I guess the computer is not responding. So, oh, good. And sometimes, you know, we need to build up ourselves from our past. Our response to in time of trouble and failure reveal who our true faith is. It is gut check time for Moses. Does he have the faith and courage to trust God and take on the mission again? The present life is not good, but at least it's bearable. And then to come back, Moses risked a lot. And after asking these questions, Moses refuses God's call three more times by giving three more excuses. He doubts the people's confidence in him. He cannot speak. And then lastly, out of excuses, God just said, "Why send anyone but me?" But God becomes angry, and out of fear, Moses, at the end, reluctantly obeys God and accepts the mission. And that's the key in turning around a failure and in being restored by God, is despite his reluctance, Moses does the right thing. That is, he obeys and submits to God's plan. He has his doubts. He doesn't like it, but he obeys. That's the meaning of obedience. When we try to bury, flee from our past, God, out of his love, wants us to face ourselves and our own demons for our own good. God is gracious, and he's also a God of second chance. And God offers Moses a second chance after his first failure. Brother and sister, when we are disappointed and want to give up like Moses, God gives us a second chance too, to be with him and experience him anew. If you have failed, you have to replace your fear with faith in God, knowing that failure is not final and that only God defines us, not failure. Then the whole key is for us to obey God and trust God, just as Moses rebuilds himself by relearning God. We need to pray, we need to follow God's word, and obey, even though you may have your own doubts. We need to trust and obey God one step at a time. Proverbs says, "For though the righteous fall seven times, they rise again." The key is to obey. And look at Moses. He doubts himself. He, you know, from who am I? Moses finds his true identity as God's servant. And everyone said that. The Israeli people said that in Exodus 14, 31. And the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and his servant Moses. The people affirm. God himself affirms. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. That's in Numbers. And even Moses himself called himself the servant of God. So, Lord, you have begun to show to your servant. So you see that Moses finds his identity in God. And from who you are, God, Moses knows God intimately later. In Exodus chapter 33, it says, "So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend." And, remember Pastor Stan's message last week about change? And when we Christians want to change, there are two key ingredients: submission to God and obedience. I think Moses' story reflects the same principles, that through submission and obedience, we can start anew. We do not need to be haunted by our failure. And lastly, God the Father affirms Jesus as his son in Jesus' baptism. Jesus also knows that he knows God, and he and God the Father are one. And like Moses, Jesus experiences rejection by the people he loves and comes to save. At the cross, people mocked Jesus. He saved others, but he can't save himself. And in order to accomplish God's mission, Jesus submits himself to God's plan at the cross. And later, Paul comments, Jesus humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Famous Bible scholar Moody once said, Moses spent his first 40 years thinking he was somebody. He spent his second 40 years learning he was a nobody. He spent his third 40 years discovering what God can do with a nobody. We all can start anew. If you think you are nobody, that's just a good situation to start anew. But the key is for us to obey God. Thank you.